Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
You're listening to the Chasing Tails Outdoor Podcast, where when you can't be in the outdoors, we bring it to you. What's up, everybody? My name is Walt. Welcome back to the podcast. We're doing a little thing weird here. I apologize in advance, but we're going to do a little bit of an intro here to the beginning of this show just because we had some technical difficulties on the front end of things, and it ate into our podcasting window, and our guests had very limited time, so we didn't spend a whole lot of time on an intro, and we know that's important to you guys. In fact, we know that's the favorite part of the show for you guys. So I couldn't let you guys do without. And so here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a brief intro here, and then I'm going to let you get to the meat and potatoes of this episode, which I think is a really, really good one. This is going to be one of those episodes you're going to want to see on YouTube as well. So if you don't follow our YouTube channel, definitely check it out. It is the place to be if you want to see these video podcasts after we record them. So let's talk about a little bit business here. We have got to thank the people who make this show possible. Don't go anywhere. If you're listening to this, this isn't an immediate sponsor shout out here. This is a pro staff shout out. And the pro staffers who support this show sign up via Patreon. Patreon is a crowdfunding source that allows us to raise money to offset the operating costs. Gas is expensive, so traveling to shoot videos is tough. There are hosting fees and equipment upgrades and equipment repairs and replacements that we have to make over time. And you guys help make this possible. And as part of those benefits, you get shout outs on the podcast, free merch, discounts on our web store. And most recently, Raymond Vidal signed up out of South Florida. I just want to say thanks to him for signing up here recently. You've got a hat coming your way. In fact, I've got 5 hats going out, and I've got 22 new shirts going out tomorrow as well. So this kind of brings us to our second point of business on this episode, and that is if you haven't already gotten your Public Land, Florida Public Land Legends t-shirt or your Hobbla Gobbla t-shirt, we have still got limited quantities online. And if you purchase a Hobbla Gobbla t-shirt, you get magnets in your order as well. We still have just enough to fulfill some more of those orders. So jump on there, get what you need, and we will get it into the mail to you ASAP. We appreciate you guys. The money raised from that goes, again, right back into the production costs, the travel costs, everything that goes into running the show and expanding this show. You know, we're moving into a video format to kind of get you guys more content, and I think very soon we're going to start doing more of these live for you guys to interact and see what we're doing live on the show, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy that. And we have partnered up with one company who has, through thick and thin, been here with us and has supported every endeavor that we've ever set out to do, and that's Spartan Forge. If you don't know about Spartan Forge, it is a next-generation mapping and deer prediction software. You need to go back and listen to the episodes that we've done with Bill. This software is next-level good. It's not going to tell you where you need to find him precisely on a map, but it's going to give you the confidence when you're trying to pick between 2 and 3 locations to figure out where you want to go, and it has been ridiculously accurate in the 2 years that we've used it. So I just want to give them some love, and You know, you can save some money if you use the promo code ChasingTales, T-A-L-E-S, on their website. Lock in for a life, 25% discount, the pricing that's available here. And it is going to be going up in the near future. So head over there, lock in your pricing, get ready for all the cool things that he's rolling out. We've got an episode coming with him really soon, and I'm excited to talk about all the things that are coming out. And I'll tell you something, Bill's a good dude, because we're figuring out the Yakking for Bass Challenge, which is going to happen again this year for, I think, the fourth year. Let me see. It's either the third or fourth year. I think it's the fourth year, but time is flying by either which way. And Bill reached out to me and said, dude, I want to be a part of this, and we've got something really cool coming your way, and it's a ridiculously generous offer. So stay tuned for the announcement of the Yakking for Bass Challenge. You're not going to want to miss out on what we're doing as a promo at the beginning of that. So with all of that said, guys, I hope you enjoy this week's episode. We're continuing the trend of these video podcasts where we can bring you topics that are a little more visual, where you can kind of see the interaction and the dynamics a little richer, because oftentimes we can't do these in person. So thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you guys have a wonderful week and enjoy the show. We have got our first turkey contributor for the first time in 2 years. I did the math on this, buddy. It's been 2 years since you've been on the show. Bo from South Georgia, dude, you scrounged up enough internet to join us. Appreciate you, sir.
Yeah, the gerbil's eating overtime tonight.
Love that, man. Love that. And then we are joined by Drew Abel, a man everybody in the state of Alabama knows, by the owner of Foot on the Head and Grounded Vest. Dude, you are a ridiculously busy man this time of year, but I appreciate you carving out some time.
Yeah, man. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. So what we have here, I'm going to call as the greatest ensemble of turkey hunters ever on the Chasing Tail podcast in one podcast episode, largely because there's four. There's four of us for the first time talking turkey. So it's an easy plug there. But the purpose of tonight, we're going to talk about some turkey hunting. I want to get your perspective on Alabama. Alabama is highly regarded as one of the hardest states to hunt. You know, everybody thinks they've got the hardest state to hunt. But when I talk to people across the country, and I get that privilege all the time about turkeys, they turn their nose up at South Carolina, and those birds are tough to hunt. Mississippi, those birds are tough to hunt. Louisiana, the tough, but every one of them like stops the conversation with, but I'll tell you what, man, I got my butt kicked in Alabama. Is it as bad as they make it out to be?
Yes and no. I think it depends on the time of year and where they're at, and you know what I mean. It's like anything. If you hunt a pressured turkey, they're going to be hard to kill. So, but overall, I would say we do have a lot of pressure, which is going to make hunting hard here, especially on public ground.
Well, I mean, y'all get like five birds for a year. It seems like, and your season runs a pretty good distance. It feels like you guys should just have toms on every corner ready to get shot with those kind of like opportunities.
Right, right. Yeah, it's, we do have a pretty long season. So historically, we've always opened up on March the 15th, and let's see, last year or 2 years ago, they pushed it back to like the third Saturday, and now they pushed it back to March the 25th. So it runs March the 25th through like that first Sunday into May, whatever that date falls on. I think it's like the 6th this year. We get a long time. They did drop our bag limit to four. Okay. Some people agreed with, some people didn't agree with. So it depends on which side of the table you're on. I will say there's a perceived decline in turkey numbers across Alabama. I'll agree with it from what I've seen just growing up and what I remember, you know, through the years. I killed my first one when I was 7, 31 now. So, you know, I've been doing it for a few years. And I don't think personally on the farms that we hunt that we have as many turkeys. But, you know, a lot of factors play into that.
I like the qualifier you put on there, perceived. That was your way of not getting hate mail at the end of the podcast.
That's right. I know some people that don't. They're like, oh, I haven't got more turkeys than I can shake a stick at, and I'm like, good for you. But the places that I cannot say the same thing for.
Bo, I believe you're the only person here who's hunted Alabama for turkeys. Is that right?
Yeah, I got my butt kicked. Is what I got over there. Yeah, I tried a late season hunt over there.
I like very end of the season or when?
Yeah, it was just a last minute thing, and I didn't even hear a bird. It was I can't remember the name. But I was in a national forest up on the north side, right across from me here. And yeah, it didn't go too well. And I It was so miserably hot, and I was so burnt out from the season already. It was that's the excuses come out there.
We all got it, man. We don't have a good hunt. Oh man, you know they were done. It was over with.
I mean, I killed my bird in Mississippi last year. Never heard a gobble in 3 days. That was one of the most miserable hunts I've ever been on in my life. That ended absolutely amazingly. It was, but yeah, Alabama was. I'm ready to go back. Y'all just keep increasing those license prices a little too much over there for us out of state boys.
Man, I understand. I completely understand that. I go to Tennessee and hunt a lot because we're like right on the Alabama-Tennessee line, and that's the same way. Their price is the same thing as our price, and it's just like, oh my gosh. But hey,
yeah, but you still get your four birds there too, don't you?
So the counties that we hunt in Tennessee have this year drastically changed their season. So historically, we always open the first Saturday of April. Now we're not starting this year till the 16th, and we went from 4 bird bag limit to 2 bird bag limit. So I probably won't kill my 2. I'll probably just kill 1 if I get the chance, and then call it good with that, just because. So my family, we own a farm right over the state line, and it used to be nothing. I mean, literally not exaggerate, 230 acres. We used to kill anywhere from 6 to 10 longbeards a year off of it and still have 3 to 4 turkeys gobbling at the end of the year. It was just unbelievable. You know, you would see flocks in the river bottom, 250 to 300 turkeys every single winter. I mean, not a problem. And that was 15, 16, 17 years ago. And now we're lucky if we see a flock of 30 birds in the wintertime. So it's one of those things, man, I love the resource. I love to hunt. I love to kill turkeys as much as the next guy. But knowing where it was and where it is, it's just like I'm not going to, you know, kill more than my 1 probably just for the, you know, sake of the resource. But, and I know a lot of people disagree with that. Like, hey, you got 230 acres. Like, you know, if you don't shoot a turkey, like your neighbor's going to shoot it. I'm like, well, I got to take that chance, you know?
You know, go ahead.
Oh, you said something earlier that perceived. I remember the same thoughts 15 years ago. How many birds we used to hear versus, I mean, I still have some great populations of birds, but it is quite different. I mean, I've had a place with 10 acres. We killed 6 birds off with between 3 of us in 1 year.
Wow.
And I haven't heard of a bird there in 3 years. It's just, and some of the land changed, but just little things like that, that I don't think people are realizing. It seems like turkey has exploded the last couple of years. And it's just, for us that we're doing it before it was cool per se, it is different. It's still great, but it is different for sure now.
You know, I have a bit of a warped perspective to this. You know, chase turkey. I claim 2020 as the year I became a turkey hunter. I had turkey hunted prior to that, but I didn't know what I was doing. I had no one to teach me. I just kind of went like 3 or 4 times, and then I bass fished the rest of the spring until it was deer season. You know, that was just kind of what I did. 2020 was like this, like unbelievable pressured year, and everybody's like, oh, you know, pressure was crazy. Everywhere I went here, man, I had spots to, you know, out the wazoo. If I didn't want to go to this spot, I could just pick up and go to another spot, and there was never a truck there. Incrementally, that pressure in 2021 and this year has been unreal. I mean, there has been this unreal bump, and I kind of blame a mix of factors, largely, you know, like Alabama and Georgia rolling their seasons back. Mm-hmm. You know, now all those boys are still looking for that early, that shotgun start.
Absolutely.
Yeah, at least you can hunt public land. We don't even have public land to hunt right now. It's still closed.
Nice. Yeah, one of my buddies down here in Florida, he was hunting a piece of public. It's kind of quotas, basically the first like 15 to 20 hunters that show up get to go in or whatever. And years past, it would be nothing but Florida guys there. And he said this season it was all out of state guys, all Alabama, all Georgia. They were all at the gate like 4 o'clock in the morning that first week of the season down here in Florida. He said, and some Kentucky and stuff too, but he said he had never seen that many out of state guys, not even close this year, relating to like past hunting on that piece.
Yeah, it was interesting. So I took the first 4 days and hunted all first 4 days. So that was on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. On Monday morning, so the pressure was kind of crazy well, it wasn't crazy Saturday because we had the worst storms I've ever seen in turkey season come through. And so that kind of kept people out the woods. But Sunday, there was a pile of pressure and my buddy leaves Sunday, and Monday I go out hunting and I get up at 4 o'clock. You know, I live 2 miles from my spot, so it's not hard for me to get there early without getting up too early. And I get there and there's 3 trucks parked there. I've never seen one park there, let alone the 3. And so I go to plan B and I go to plan C and I go to plan D, and the panic kind of starts to kick in. I'm not going to lie to you. You know, it's one of those things, like there's trucks everywhere. And I started counting the license plates, out of state license plates. I wasn't worried about Florida because I didn't think the Florida pressure changed any. From the time I got from spot A to where I finally found a spot where there wasn't a truck parked, I counted 17 Georgia license plates. And it was just like, that is just year over year, that's a humongous difference. And you know, the good news is most of those boys were out of there because I was bouncing around to like random spots and then just, you know, doing my thing. It's a lot of pick up move to this block and see if you can strike up a bird. And by 9 o'clock most of those guys were gone, and so you had the woods kind of to yourself. But that pressure influx, man, that's going to change the way the birds act. And you know, people from Alabama, they claim it's the heavy pressure and the long turkey hunting heritage that has conditioned those birds. And I'm used to hearing a lot of birds gobble, and it's not happening right now.
Yeah, I'll definitely agree with that with pressure, man. I can tell you how many times – I can't tell you how many times, you know, I've gone into an area, especially, you know, earlier on in my hunting career, I guess, you know, kind of gung-ho and young, don't know a lot. And then, man, you bump those birds 2 or 3 times. And then after that, like, gobbling decreased drastically. I mean, drastically. So, yeah, pressure definitely plays into that, no doubt.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I started this season off thinking that I would just have my run of the place. And I've suddenly had to adapt as if I'm out of state, and that's not something I care too much for. But I worry about that influx, where it comes from, and if we've onboarded those turkey hunters. What I mean by that is, are they – Bo, you and I talk about this all the time. There's a WMA up there that I hunt, and the pressure is unreal, but it's not good pressure because it's not people hunting well, and I'm not judging anybody's skills, but there is – someone who pursues it in a way that is productive for everyone. And then there's just someone in the woods for the sake of being in the woods. And I wonder if that uptick in popularity of turkey hunting, have we done enough to make sure that the culture of turkey hunting has been passed on? I'd be interested in what your thoughts are.
Yeah. I guess my take on it, just real quick, like, would be no. I mean, I don't feel like we've done a really good job of teaching these young guys and showing them, you know, exactly what it means to do that, and do it the right way, do it the old school way. But you know, even if we haven't, we can always start now. You know, it's never too late. We always have the opportunity to grow and to get better, you know, as people, as hunters, whatever. So.
Oh, you had a thought there.
I mean, I agree. I mean, we're not supposed to, you know, drive in a truck and stop at the box, call and yelp 10 times and then crank the truck back up immediately and start driving. That's frowned upon. The one of the things I've seen with the influx pressure up here. I mean, I'm blessed to hunt during the week quite a bit, and I could almost name the same 3 trucks in there with me on 30,000 acres. Now there's 10, 12 trucks on my entrance, whichever entrance that may be that day, including the 2 or 3 trucks over there. And the one thing I am seeing is just the setup in regards to, you know, parking on your side of the, you know, what side you're planning to go in or where you're planning to go in, or giving somebody space. I feel like that used to happen more. Maybe I just was blessed and didn't have it as much, but I do see now that I may come in one road and I'll see a truck pass that I beat, and then I'll meet the guy on the other side of the road before the sun comes up. I'm normally courteous and I'll just leave, but it does seem that, and at first I thought it was just being more crowded, but I really don't know, to be honest with you. And I can't imagine some of that stuff I see down in where there's Osceola's, where, I mean, you get a short amount of time to do that, and people get desperate with all that money and all that time to kill one bird for some piece of paper. It's interesting. I'm curious to see where it's going to go in regards to if people are going to continue to get so caught up in the kill as opposed to enjoying, you know, what it's all about, the actual, the bird coming in and, you know, the experience in those regards. I mean, if it's all about the kill, just the turkey tastes better at Walmart. Just go buy the Butterball and let's, let's move on here.
Bo, you hit the nail on the head. I feel like we have commercialized. Now, I'm acknowledging that this podcast is a part of that commercialization. I recognize that. But I feel like we have gone so far into commercializing the kill above all else that when somebody like Dave, who last year, you know, had a point of it's okay for the turkey to get away, like it you need to be okay when the bird gets away, that's part of it, that ruffled people's feathers. And you saw this like response of where he's trying, you know, people are like, well, you go from state to state killing birds, and he's like, no, this, the point isn't don't kill a turkey. The point is, if it gets away, that was literally why you were there. You were there to do the dance. And if the turkey wins, that's an okay thing. And I feel like that is, I think we've got to, with people who have platforms like ourselves, we have got to do the best we can to kind of continue that message and make sure that people understand the right, not the right way, because that kind of comes off like pretentious, but how to further the tradition of turkey hunting, I guess, is what I'm really trying to say. But we got off on a deep note there. I can see Chase is about to like shoot me a text and be like, dude, you need to pull this up. This got too dark too quick. Drew, how's your turkey season gone so far this year?
Man, it started out good. So I got the opportunity to go to Texas. I've got a friend that, man, he's just been so good to us and invites us to come down there, has the past 2 or 3 years, and we get to go down there and hunt on his ranch. And so it started out with a bang down there, and came back to Alabama and, you know, was humbled really quick, like back here. Historically, the first probably week of the season, we usually have a pretty good bit of success. And this year was not the case. I mean, for like the first 7 or 8 hunts, I didn't even feel like I was ever in the game, you know. And it's just like, man, you know, it's starting to, you know, chomp at the bit and it's getting all over me. And I'm like, who's been touched? Like, and, you know, and then all of a sudden it happens and then it happens again. So, you know, slowly it's starting to get better, you know, but at the end of the day, I always tell myself, especially right now, it's still early. Like, yeah, man, we're only on what, April 12th or 13th right now. Like, we still got, you know, another month of the season, another 4 weeks left. So we got plenty of time. And to be honest, like historically here, that last week of April, has those 7 days have been my best 7 days. I mean, if I were to go back and can only hunt 1 week, that's going to be the week I'm going to hunt personally. For whatever reason, I can find turkeys and usually get the, you know, deal sealed. So, but it's been a struggle. Hopefully it continues to pick up day by day. We'll see.
Bo, Chase, we know how your season's gone. You get some airtime, so I'm going to jump to Chase or to Bo real quick. How's your season gone so far, sir?
It started off where I thought it was going to be really hot. Took a youth, and I will say 5 years old is about almost too young to not be in a ground blind. Pro tip there. He loved hearing the gobbles, but he could not sit still, and his dad couldn't keep him still. He got to see a few birds, but not anywhere near shotgun range. But he had a great time. But since then, I haven't felt like I've been in the game. I've been kind of hanging back a little bit. With Georgia changing the laws with the public land, I mean, I've got about 60,000 acres within an hour of me, and I think 10,000 of it has just now opened up this past weekend. So I'm going to start trying to hit some here. But I've been kind of just keeping tabs on birds. A lot of our birds are still really clumped up here. I saw 7 longbeards Sunday in a field with one hen, and they were all in strut. I'm not a big fanner, so I wasn't going to fan them. I'm waiting for them to start breaking on off a little bit. And I agree with what Dave said. The end of April, 1st of May, especially on my lease, the pressure leaves, and I'm able to do a lot more work. So it's early. I'm getting ready to kind of chase that next little stage there.
Right on. I think I hunted Georgia this past weekend because it was the opener. Every single hen and every single turkey I saw, with the exception of 2, were hens. And all of those hens were by themselves and acting like they were trying to distract me from the brush where I was finding them. So it's interesting you say that, because in my area, Georgia, I came away with the feeling like the rut was already over, like, you know, like it was done. And I went back. Saturday was a terrible day weather-wise, and I went back Sunday like, oh, I'm about to smash one in the face, because I just, if they're all bred, man, we're right here in the middle of the season. Like, he's got to be looking for love. And dude, it was dead silent. But Chase, dude, you had one of the coolest experiences in a while. You sent me a video the other day from the woods, which had to be absolutely maddening.
Yeah, that's true. I got on a bird gobbling that morning. When he gobbled, I was way off, so I knew I had to cut the distance quite a bit. Cut the distance. He gobbled again. Felt like I was pretty close. Got set up. And this was probably maybe generally about 15, 20 minutes after they fly down time or whatever. So assuming that they were on the ground, get set up, do it like a little yelp and cluck or whatever. And the bird gobbled. It sounded like he was right on top of me, like probably 50 yards through these pines. I'm like, oh, he's coming. He's going to come right here. And sat there for like 10, 15 minutes, nothing. Decided, I was like, well, I'll give him a little something again. Didn't hear anything. And I'm like, where is this bird? I was like, it sounded like he was just like 50 yards away from me. So I decided to get up, start walking down this little, basically two track, and I get probably maybe 100 yards and I hear something flying, and I look up and it looks like to be a gobbler that was already in the tree. This oak tree flies up higher on one of the limbs, and I'm thinking, I was like, well, did I just bust him or whatever? I was like, I would have figured he wouldn't have just flown up higher in the tree. Maybe he would have flown off to the next county or something, but not higher in the tree. And so I kind of step back for a second, and then I look in the tree and the bird is in full strut in the tree, just sitting there full strut. And I can hear his wings like clicking on the oak limb that he's on, just click, click. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? And he's not paying me any attention. He's kind of looking away from me. So I back into these pine trees nearby, sit there, call a little bit, never hear anything. 15, 20 minutes goes by. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to step back out and see if he's still out there. He's still in the same spot, still in full strut, in the same spot on the limb. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to get back up in the trees again and see if I can't coax him to come down. Do the same thing. 20, 30 minutes goes by, nothing. Go back out, still full strut in the tree. I can still hear the wings just clicking on the branch. I'm like, all right. I was like, I figured I could go through the pines, get on the backside to see what the bird is actually doing, because there were some limbs and stuff in the way and I could see his wings quite a bit, but I wanted to get on the backside. So I finally go around, get on the backside of this bird, come back out to the road, and I can see his fan. Like, he's still full strut on the tree, and there's a hen still in the tree with him. So this hen was like slowly working away from him, and he was slowly working towards this hen. And I'm like, all right, well, and she's like working away from me as well. So I'm like, this probably isn't going to end well at all. But I sat there for a little while. He's just like creeping right behind her in the tree the entire time. And this is probably over 2 hours after fly down, still in the tree, strutted the whole time. I could finally see his beard. He probably had like a 10-inch beard or something like that. And she's just working up this limb, and then she finally runs out of real estate and she decides she's going to fly down. Well, of course, she flies down the exact opposite direction I'm in the woods. He takes like one look at her flying down. He kind of, it almost looks like he looked to see where she landed, and then wham, he follows her to where she's at. And the only thing I can think of is why they were still in that tree is there's a field that they like to go to. Like, they had just planted some pines there, and there's also kind of like a watermelon field that butts up to it. And some of the farmers were in there like first thing in the morning. And they were making noise. I could hear them over there, and they had finally left probably right before that. Like, there was nothing else in that field or whatever, and the hen probably decided it was time to fly down. That's the only thing I can think of with them being in the tree for like 2 hours after fly down. And I don't know. I don't. That's the only thing I can think of. But I've never had that happen where it just sits there and strutting a tree for 2 hours, slowly following the hen the entire time.
He could have been trying to convince her to join the Mile High Club.
Possible. Very possible.
I'm at work and Chase is like, I got one goblin on the limb. This joker sends me a video and I'm gonna find some way of putting it in this video for you guys on YouTube who are watching. But it is broad daylight. I'm talking, it is just bluebird skies. If you told me what time of day this is, I'm thinking it's like 11 o'clock. You know, it's unreal. And I was just expecting, I'm sitting here at work like a schmuck, just dying to be in the woods. And of course my co-host, you know, back in the day he never worked, and so it was like every day I could live vicariously through him. And I'm like, my phone would go off, I'd grab my phone and be like, it's my mom, okay, put it back down, you know. I grab my phone, he'd go off, and I'm doing this number, and finally like 3 o'clock, this joker leaves me hanging until 3 p.m to respond. He's like, yeah, she flew down in the other direction and left. I'm like, dude, I've been dying every day. Like, I'm in meetings, I'm like pulling my phone out waiting to see this like gobbler, you know, like. So
in my defense, I had told my dad I was going to help him do something that day. And I was already like an hour behind. I kept texting him like, hey, dad, sorry, I'll be there. I'm like, I'm waiting for this turkey to fly down. Once he flies down, then and I'll see where he goes. But and then I was just hightailing it back to the truck, trying to get to where my dad was to help him out. But
yeah,
I do some strange stuff sometimes.
Yeah, man, that's I told him, I think what we need to do is we need to get you some like number 4 TSS or something, so that next time you can just knock the branches down and, you know, follow up with a good ethical shot, you know. But
I don't know. Does that still count to shoot them on the roost?
I don't think at 10 o'clock it does.
If,
I mean, at
if
that
you've
point,
seen
it's
them
just a,
like literally move all the way around the tree, fly up to a different limb. He flew down at like, well, I think it was 9:25. In the morning is when they flew down. So
there you go.
I don't know.
Well, Drew, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast, man, I am a huge fan of people who challenge norms big time. I like people who come in and disrupt things, and you are not unfamiliar to the turkey hunting community. You've got the Turkey Call Company foot on the head, very popular. It seems like it's everywhere on social media. And then last year you dropped a humdinger and challenged the status quo of what a vest should look like, man. I could ramble, but I think it's best everybody hears from you. What are we talking about here?
Grounded turkey vests. Man, so I'll kind of start, if you want me to go through the story, I can kind of start from the very beginning and kind of tell you a little bit about why I did it, when I did it. I'll kind of preface it by saying I've always wanted, and I don't know why, but I've always wanted to design a turkey vest. Probably since I was like 16 years old. Like, I just loved gear and the aspect of designing it and being intentional. And so I wanted to do it, put it off, you know. It's one of those things, one day, right? And long story short, man, some things happened in my life and a coworker's life, and it just made me really question, like, is what I'm doing, you know, am I supposed to be doing this, or do I need to be doing something else? And so when I sat down and thought about it and prayed about it, it was like, okay, you know, there's something else out there for me. And man, I'll tell you the story about how I came about with the name of it. So I thought about the name, I run it by my wife, and she's like, absolutely love it. Like, you know, I think it fits, you know, the industry well. I think it fits the application well, you know, and it's just an overall, just a good name. And so we're like, okay, you know, and so I kind of sit on it, man. And I sat on it for probably like 6 months. I told one friend, that was it, one friend of my wife, and I texted it to him. And I'm like, it's like 6 months later, 7 months later, I'm on my way home from work. And I'm like, when I get home, I'm going to go check the domain and buy it. You know, I get home and I can't remember the name. Like, literally, my mind is just like blank. And I'm like, okay, you know, it'll come. And so like 2 or 3 days goes by, and I'm like, it literally never came back. And so I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go to my text message. Like, I never delete any text messages. Like, you can go through my – I've got, like, text messages from, like, 5 years ago, okay? And, like, I go through there, man. Like, I go back, like, 2 years, and obviously I know it hadn't been 2 years since I thought of it. The name's gone. Like, that text message is not there. And I'm like, man. So I thought about it, and finally I just told my wife, I said, it's not God's timing. It's not God's – I'm not going to do it. So kind of put it to the side, okay? Fast forward a year from that. And I'm sitting in a leadership conference that our church puts on with a guy named John Maxwell. He's like a big leadership guy. Anyways, I'm sitting in there and it's like, boom, he just hits me right in the face with this statement and the name comes back to me. And I'm like, okay, it's time. Write the name down, text the name to my wife, you know what I mean? Like tattoo it on my arm real quick. Like, and I'm like, okay, it's time. And so from that point on, I started. I didn't waste any time. From time to that I started designing, the time I brought it to market was about 4.5 years. Wow. I knew nothing about designing. I knew nothing about manufacturing. I knew nothing about licensing Mossy Oak or Realtree or camo patterns, or I knew nothing about fabrics. So it was like, I mean, literally, you know, start from scratch. And then, you know, through that 4.5 year process of bringing it to market, you get samples and then you kind of field test. And, you know, luckily was able to bring it to market last year. Couldn't get full production run in hand. So kind of did a little pre-sale to get some hype for it before the season. That went extremely well. I sold out of my bottom land pattern, you know, in like, or Mossy Oak's new bottom land pattern in like 3 days. Which was phenomenal. I was blown away. Had no idea it would hit that hard, you know, and just really grateful and thankful for the opportunity. And then was able to get the rest of production in hand. And that's partly what I had this year. So it's been a wild ride for the last year and a half, I would say. It's not at all what I expected it would be. It was extremely hard. It still is extremely hard. I've got a ton to learn. But, you know, it's one of those things. You take one step each and every day. And you try to get better and you try to learn something new. But the reason behind starting it was just really to start a company that offers high-end gear for turkey hunters. I feel like the turkey hunter himself or herself is overlooked, right? There's a lot of other gear companies out there that tailor gear towards that type of hunting, whether it be waterfowl hunting or whitetail hunting or big game hunting. But nobody does that in the turkey hunting community. I'm the type of individual, I would rather, you know, buy once, cry once, per se. That's just my personality. I want something that's going to be high quality. I'm going to use it for a long time. That way I learn it, you know, and it kind of becomes a part of me. So that's been the goal with Grounded, is to keep everything high quality, but to also just focus on the turkey hunter. I don't want to get into the deer stuff, into the waterfowl stuff, into the big game stuff. Maybe one day, but I want to be known for turkey hunting gear. That's my passion. That's my love. And so that's kind of where we're headed with the company. So kind of a little background story on how it started, the name behind it. And yeah.
You know, it's always frustrating when you have like 5 or 6 questions and your guest doesn't give you a chance after you've thought so hard to have those questions. He just knocks them off. I'm kidding. That's awesome, man. That's 4 years, dude. Like, how did you keep a lid on that for 4 years? I find a turkey and, I mean, aside from sending somebody GPS coordinates, I think everybody in my phone gets a text message.
Man, it's one of those things. Like, so I feel like Grounded has a very high ceiling. We've got a very high potential within this, you know, for this company and where it could go one day. And it's one of those things, knowing that, you know, I listened to just a ton of podcasts about, you know, starting a company, building a company, leading a company. And I don't know if y'all know who Sarah Blakely is, but yep. She started a big company called Spanx and sold it for, I don't even know, $200 billion or something like that. It's a lot of money. Okay. And I'll never forget, I heard her make the statement that an idea in its infancy is so fragile and you have to really protect it. It's almost like a baby, right? Think of it as a baby. And so the idea in itself was, hey, if I let this idea get out there, like there's some other big fish that I'm going to one day compete against that could really just take this and run with it. They've got more money. They've got a name. They've got experience. They've got all these things that I don't have. Right. And so if I kind of let this slip, then it's, you know, it could really put me out before I even get started. And they may still, I hope not, but you know, we got a long road ahead, but it was one of those things. I told my wife, I told my mom and my dad, my two in-laws, and one friend, and that was it. That's all I told, you know. And the people that I did tell was really just to gain, you know, understanding about, you know, their thoughts behind a turkey vest and how they hunt and what they wanted, you know. And then from there, you go on, you know, forums and Facebook pages, and you, you know, kind of secretly drop questions, you know. Figure stuff out.
You know, it's funny because what you just said, I think, is going to resonate with a lot of people. There is entire chunks of the hunting community, let alone the turkey, but there are still, I think, huge chunks of the hunting community that get crap gear, and it's the best we've ever had, and so we think it's the best there could be. And then you have people that come in and challenge the status quo. Tethered's and is a prime example of that. They come in, they challenge the status quo. Suddenly, an entire industry pops up, and people aren't so much worried about a price point; they're worried about buying the best thing they can because suddenly everything's better. Sitka did the same thing for camouflage. You know, before Sitka hit the market and Kuyu hit the market, and these market disruptors came in, you know, we were okay with BDUs and 9 cotton layers. And if you were lucky enough to know about wool, I mean, you maybe had some of that, but it was probably itchy. And so I am a gear snob. These two individuals here that are joining me bear the brunt of my pickiness to the point where I can always tell when I've worn a topic shy of their attention at that point in time. Backpacks, my God, I can't bring up a backpack probably for the next 5 to 10 years before Chase is going to shank me. I mean, I talked about it ad nauseum, you know. Yeah. But I've never liked a turkey vest. I had some that were good, but it always felt like it was engineered for selling and not for the turkey hunter. So let's talk about this. What did you seek to resolve with your vest?
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Man, so I'll kind of preface this by saying, like, I'll tell you, like, my mindset behind what I wore while I wore. So I wore Cabela's Tater vest for a long time, and it was the Tater 3, Tactical Tater 3. They don't even sell it anymore. But it was a great vest. It was well-made. Shoot, I hunted out of it for, like, 9 or 10 years. So obviously quality was fine. But the pocket layout, to me, just didn't make sense. So my mindset going into it was, number one, it's got to be super high quality. But number two, it's got to have a good just pocket layout and be thought out for a turkey hunter. It just seemed like pockets were put places, right? It was, hey, you open this one zipper and you get one pot call out, right? Well, I've just got a pot call. Like, I don't have a striker. I don't have a conditioning stone. I don't have a Brillo pad. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just like, okay, I'm doing a lot of extra work here, you know, and I'm making more noise than I should. And this just doesn't seem practical and thought out. So it was like, okay, then you start going from there. And so the mindset behind this vest that I created, the impact vest, and I know Alps they've got an impact vest as well, right? But when I was thinking about naming this thing, not to get off on a little tangent, but I wanted it to represent the company well. And that's literally the goal. Like, I want to impact you. I want to impact the next person that buys it, and for the positive, obviously. And so I had to name it Impact, because that's the goal of the company and of the vest and the products and everything. But so anyways, we designed it with two main pockets on the front. And so those two main pockets are going to house almost all of your stuff. You know, it's got your box call on one side, and then your other side holds your Brillo pads, your pop calls, your Scotch-Brite, your strikers, your sandpaper, your chalk, if you want to put it in there. And then you kind of, you know, go throughout the vest from there. But the mindset was, I want it to be easily laid out to where, boom, you know where everything is. But then also, like, you're not opening a bunch of pockets to get stuff out because you don't want to make a lot of noise turkey, you know? So that's kind of how it started.
All right, gentlemen, I'm just going to keep rattling off questions, and you were invited here for a reason. Y'all's turn.
I'll tell you the first thing when I saw the vest, one of the best ideas you had was the clip right here on the chest to undo the strap there. Mm-hmm. I take my shoulder strap off every time I sit down with my right arm, but I lose the whole pouch then. because it flips around behind me.
Yeah.
And, you know, to undo that, having that still sit right there, that was, I never thought of that. And I mean, it was one of those, when I saw it on your vest, it was like, oh, that's, looky there. That's a snake would have bit me for sure. But that's ingenious. Absolutely ingenious. And it still holds the pack up. So you still got your back support and everything right there against the tree.
Right.
I mean, that's a really, really well thought out idea right there by far.
You do that a lot, man. I'll kind of, if you want me to, I've got the vest right here. You want me to
do it? Yeah, let's run through it, and then you guys pipe in with questions. Otherwise, I'm gonna run away with it. So, I see that little clip though. Now that you say that, I didn't notice that before, Bo. That's crazy.
Yeah. So one thing that I think the Dixon vest did well, they had the claw sling straps on it, right? It really like gripped well. It held well. Well, one of the things that always frustrated me with my Tater vest was, I wear a Mountain Gear, North Mountain Gear Leafy suit, right? And before they came out, it was I wore like a cheap Bass Pro Shops, you know, one polyester. So it was real slick. And anytime I'd be walking, I don't like having the chest buckles. I don't like having this thing buckled. For whatever reason, it just constricts me. I don't enjoy it, you know, but it would always slide off. And so I'm like, why doesn't a company put dadgum silicone or something on the bottom of these shoulder straps? You know, and nobody ever did that besides the Dixon vest. And so it was like, okay, so that's one of the features that we have on here, right, is the silicone on the inside of the straps. So that way, when it's here, man, even if you're not buckled, it's not going to really slide off until you know, if you sit down and then it kind of, you know, it comes up, it loosens up. But if you've got weight on it, it's not going to slide off of you. So that's one of the top features, man, that I get, you know, comments about and responses and emails about. It's like, man, I love that, you know, aspect of it and feature from it. So we put the silicone there, and I'll kind of start on the left side as you're going to use it, and then I'll come around to the right. So in this pocket, we've got YKK zippers on it. They're quiet, but most importantly, they're just well made. We've got four pot calls. Most turkey hunters don't carry four pots, but some do. So we offer that option there. You can put four different strikers within this pocket. So personally, I carry two pots, and then the other pot call holders, I put my stone in and my Brillo pads. I don't use sandpaper. I think I put some chalk in there. I chalk an aluminum call every now and then, get a little better grip on it. So pro tip for you right there.
Yeah.
just some chalk on it. It's not going to hurt the call or anything like that. So that's kind of on this side. One big main pocket's going to house those things. Okay, right above it, another quick, easy, quiet access point. We've got a magnetized mouth call pocket on here. It's just deeper than the height of a mouth call. So it's not like you're having to like reach way down in there to grab the thing. So it's super quiet. It's a strong magnet. I mean, you can hear it probably in the video here, right?
Yeah.
It's not just going to open if you have to crawl or lean over or anything like that. Next to that, we've got a locator call pocket. It's made so that the locator call fits about halfway down, because you don't want to, it's so skinny, you don't want to have to try to get your finger in there. So I always tell people, if you're going to put a lanyard on it and put that lanyard around this strap right here. So that way, if you do lean over or something and it falls out, you know, you don't lose the call. So I wanted those to be quick, easy, you know, accessibly. I mean, just really quiet overall. So we put those with magnets on. Same thing, those two pockets are on the right side of the vest too. So if you have a hand preference on which, you know, which hand you want to use to grab it with, you know, you've got that option. The feature that a lot of people really like too is this vest has a ton of storage. So right here along the inside, you've got one huge pocket. And within here, we've got a reinforced sleeve for pruning shears. So you can put them in here. They're not going to poke a hole through it. Every Cabela's vest that I had, always I poked a hole right through it. Every time, it never failed. So it might take me 4 years to do it, but I did poke a hole through it eventually. So we put some extra material in there to reinforce that, and hopefully, you know, you won't have that problem. And then one on the inside of the vest, as you open it up, just one mesh pocket, kind of store whatever you want to. And as we go around to the right side, we've got the same big pocket here mirrored with shears. So you, again, you know, if you've got that hand preference, you can choose that. Which side you want to put it on, big pocket on the inside. And then the other main pocket here on this side is the one that's got your box call sleeve in it. It's got your shell pouches right there, so, or sleeves. So if you want to hold your extra shells in there, you can do that. We did make them a little bit tighter than most companies. They'll fit a 12 gauge shell, a 20 gauge shell, 16 and 28 gauge. I've never tried the 410 in there, but I'll say this, the 20 gauge, and I shoot a 20, extremely hard to get in there. So then you don't have to worry about them falling out, slipping. Eventually, you know, if you use the thing for 7, 8, 9, 10 years, it'll loosen up and it'll wear out a little bit. But so a lot of people get it and they're like, dang, them things are tight. Well, they were designed that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Bo, I think you talked about the buckles here. You know, this is what you were referring to. So the thought behind this was what you just talked about is if you sit down and you want to unclip it, you can. Or I've been in situations in the past where turkeys come in where you don't expect them to. And it's like, if for some reason you get caught up and you can't swing, you don't have this buckle here that's cumbersome, that's hard, you know what I mean? You just reach over, you clip it, and then you can turn out of it if you need to. So that was another thought that we had behind the buckles. The seat is attached on the back with a magnet.
How strong is that magnet?
It's strong. I mean, you're going to walk through the woods. And you can hear it just like you can the other one. Of all the competitors that I have on the market that make turkey vests, and there's other good vests out there, but the next closest pull pressure pound per magnet would be, I think, I don't remember what company it is, but it's 21 pounds of pull pressure. Okay. Mine, and a lot of people complain about it falling off. Mine's 40 or 39. It's like 39.6. So it's significantly stronger. Okay. So you don't have to worry about this thing coming off unless you're, you know what I mean? Like literally running through the woods, you know what I mean? And it's bouncing up and down and flopping. And in that case, it'll come off. But if you're just walking, you know, you're bumping on a tree or something like that, it ain't just going to fall off. We sourced the densest memory foam that we could find because, you know, sometimes you have long sits. Sometimes that turkey's out there with two or three hens and he doesn't break for an hour and a half, right? And you need to be comfortable. You don't need to be fidgeting around and moving and going to this butt cheek and that butt cheek. Like, you know, you need to be comfortable. So we put a really dense memory foam seat on it. And then probably the last feature that a lot of people really like is at the top, we've got a place that houses a water bladder.
You still there, buddy?
And then that's probably, you hear me?
Was that me? Could you guys hear him? Oh, dead coming.
So yeah, we put the water bladder in here, but you can also, we've got water bottle sleeves on each side. So there's one on the outside there, and there's another one on the inside. So if you want it, you know, protected, you know, if you don't want anything to see it or whatnot, you can put it on the inside, whatever your preference is. So there's a lot of storage in this vest. Some people don't like that because some people aren't disciplined and just can't not put stuff in it. But, you know, eventually you got to make the decision for yourself.
I feel so attacked right now.
Did your vest have everything in it?
Well, it used to. I bought that one because it's got limited storage. And so I was trying not to take everything with me, you know, but I also started, I started self-filming. And so naturally you can't carry as much so that, I think that's what I like about your vest and the appeal of it to me is it has the ability to do so much. When I saw those big pockets on the side, I'm like, dude, I could tuck my Sony in that joker and zip it up for when, you know, you're walking 3-4 miles, you ain't got to hold that thing. And you can put your tripod in the back, you know, like I like this vest for a lot of reasons, but it's not adaptable, and that one feels like it's truly meant to be adaptable.
Yeah,
I mean, I think it's basically it's the epitome of a running gut vest, the one you've designed. I mean, that's the impact I see it having greatly. I mean, that looks like a vest all my stuff's in my truck right now, but I feel like I could grab that vest and I could walk 6 miles with no issues, even if I did load it down. I mean, it just looks light. It looks like it rides well, and you took the time to think about it. The silicone on the shoulder straps, I wear a leaky suit and I've worn one for years. I've had the same issues to the point where I've put electrical tape around the top of my shoulders, trying to get a little extra grip on that. Yeah, that's a really well good thought there. And I love the little mouth call pocket there. My wife would probably say something would fall in there and it looked funny, but I that's me. It'd be too heck out of my front left pocket running around with one in there for sure.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not going to – a lot of people are like, man, you got the best vest on the market. There's a lot of great options out there. And every turkey hunter is different, man. You know, everybody's got their own preference, their own – like, I can't tell you how many people are like, man, you need two box call pockets and you need a long box pocket and you need only two pot call holders. You know what I mean? Like, every turkey hunter is different, but it's a great addition to the market. Like, it competes well. It's priced well. But at the end of the day, I can't sit here and say that it's the best because every – you know – every hunter is different and everybody's got their own, you know, wants, needs, and desires out of a vest. So it's a good option.
Chase, you've been thinking hard there for a second. What's on your mind, sir?
No, I mean, the thing that always bugs me about vest is basically the cushion.
Yeah.
On all of them, because it seems like I can sit for maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes before one of my butt cheeks is falling asleep, or it's just I'm wiggling around, moving, trying to get comfortable. And I'd have to see the vest a little bit more about like the mouth call storage.
Yeah.
On it. Are you talking about in the bin for the, like your little mouth call bin that you can put right there?
Right. Yeah. It's kind of hard to see, especially off the slide will help.
Oh yeah.
There's a little, just, I mean, it's a pocket. It's like 2.25 inches wide, 2.25 inches deep. So I mean, literally like it's just bigger than a mouth call and got a little magnet on there.
Okay.
And then they're on each side.
Nice.
So there's not like you'll see like the, it's almost imagine like a, you know, the pinch pouches or whatever they call them, people hang from their neck. It's similar to that. Okay. But it's just built on the vest. There's no slots. There's a couple mouth call holders out there that you put around your neck that have slots in them so that you can individualize each call. This one's not like that. So you could put, you know, four calls in there, they'd all be touching. It does not have slots in there for each individual call, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, I generally put mine, there's like those little like elastic mesh pockets or whatever that might be on the outside of where you'd have a pot call or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I always kind of wanted one like up higher on the strap up here. Cause that's, instead of like trying to figure out which one I'm grabbing, I could actually see it like on the strap or whatever, but I hadn't seen one like that. So, but yeah, that's a good, looks like a pretty good idea, better than what I'm currently doing.
Man, that's one of my calls. So I don't run a lot of calls. I'll tell you everything that's in my vest right now, right? I've got two mouth calls, I've got two pot calls, and I've got two tube calls. And then other than my face mask and gloves and that, I mean, water bottle, you know, or a snack or whatever, that's it. That's all I carry. Again, personal preference, you know. I like to be light. I don't like to carry a lot of stuff. So that's all I carry.
I've gotten to be, as I've tried to get better, I've gotten to be more of a fan of multiple mouth calls over multiple others. And so I almost always have like four mouth calls in my vest. The appeal to that vest to me is the ability to kind of segment what's on either side. I'm real diligent about where I put things. And I feel like I like to be able to grab my gear and go and not have to change calls out in and out. You know, if it's really windy, I need to put an aluminum in there. If it's not very windy, maybe I'm putting my glass back in there. But with those four mouth calls, you can have a really hot mouth call for windy days, and you can have your closing calls and your ghost cuts and stuff. And so, but I'll be honest with you, man, when I saw that Joker had four pot call spots, the hoarder in me really kicked in. I'm like, man, I could put all four of my daggum calls in that thing.
That's right.
And no matter what happens, I'm ready.
That's right, man. Carry it all with you, right? That's what my dad does. And I hunt with my dad pretty much every day that I hunt. I'm thankful I get that opportunity. But
that's cool.
I mean, he does. He's got all kinds of stuff. And he don't use half of it. You know, but he's got it with him in case one day he needs it.
Yeah.
So you definitely got that option if you want to carry all four, man. Have at it.
Oh, yeah. Some of it's just nostalgia, that reason our calls that I carry is just like, oh, my wife gave this to me when we first started dating or something like that.
Right.
Used it in 16 years.
Yeah.
But it goes to the best.
Take it out. I can't do it. That's not me. Like, okay, so I've got those calls in there, but I've got three face masks and three pair of gloves in there as well. Sometimes four pair of gloves. And I'm just like overly paranoid that I'm going to lose a pair of gloves or lose a face mask. And so I always have a backup, right? Like, you can't kill a turkey without a face mask or a pair of gloves.
Because I'm always hunting with somebody. And that's the first question of the truck. You got a face mask? No. Yeah. Here you go.
Yeah.
Hang on. What color do you want?
Yeah. Bottom lander obsession. I used to be like that. And then I started carrying a thing of Hardy. Little face paint. I was like, worst case scenario, I'll just put tiger stripes, you know, on my hands or whatever, and quit worrying about it. But I love that, man. I love the fact that you put so much time into it. You know, the fact that you've been a turkey hunter for as long as you have, that this is a 4-year deal. You know, I don't know why I didn't like see the fact that it might have been longer than it was. I guess maybe it's because you rolled it out so fast. It just felt like, you know, this, not that it was impulsive, but like, you know, this was larger than just, you know, get it out for this season. This was something you've been doing for a hot second, man. That's cool. So let's talk a little turkey here. We can tie this into your other business, which I don't know how you stay married, because you've got kids, you've got two turkey businesses and your turkey hunting. Maybe we can have an offline discussion on what you're doing to keep her happy. But your two mouth calls, what are you running?
So I run the goat and I run another call that we call the hooked. Okay. Both of them are bat wing calls. The goat is a 2-read call stretched on the lighter side. It's got 2 prophylactic reads on it. And then the other call that I run, the hooked, is a 3-read call. And it's kind of like opposite ends of the spectrum, right? Like goat, I can get real quiet on and semi loud. Hooked is great. It's a great call for like cutting, locating, loud yelps. You know what I mean? Just overall loud, hard, aggressive calling. So like you were talking about, you know, you carry, you know, 4 different mouth calls for, you know, different ends of the spectrum. That's why I carry those two. I like the bat wing. That's what I found to like the best. You know, again, the preference thing, how you push that air across those reeds is going to really dictate the call that you utilize the best. And the bat wing cut for me is it. So I stick with those.
You know, you're talking to a dude who kills a lot of turkeys and put some time in when he tells you his favorite is the bat wing and he only carries the bat wing. Cause that is trying, anybody who's listened to this, get a Kiki run going on a bat wing and I'll give you a dollar. Cause that thing, man, that's a unipurpose item for me. I'm not talented enough to do anything besides a yelp and maybe a purr on a bat wing, man.
You know, it's, again, everybody's got their preference, and those are my two. For a long time, I ran the Legend, ran it for like 2 years before we actually came out with the Goat, and then I also ran another call called the Able Assassin, and it's just like you can get so quiet on it, and it's really clear. You cannot get loud on it. You can do those little bubble clucks, like even if you're not a good mouth call, you can do those little bubble clucks on it. And you can do the really soft whines and, you know, tree yelps and things like that. And so I ran that call for like, probably 10 years. Mm. And I actually, every now and then I do put one in my vest, but not very often. Mm. Depends on where I'm going. But
gentlemen, I've got some closing questions and I'm going to let this fella go because he's got vests to ship and calls to make and get out the door. So y'all have any closing thoughts yourselves?
I did just want to know what his favorite part of his vest was to have 4 years in it. What's your favorite feature that you got in it?
Man, I've got two favorite features on it. I'm not going to tell you one. I'm going to tell you two. The mouth call pocket is because 90% of the time that's what I use is a mouth call. Mm-hmm. So the mouth call pocket being number one. The second thing is the cushion and the magnet that attaches it. It's so quick. It's so easy. And then that cushion is just so comfortable. So I'll preface this by saying that we were in Texas this spring, right? And I was wearing the Obsession vest, and we were hunting a roost location the second evening, first or second evening, I don't remember. But we had to sit there for a pretty good while, and it was no time. My butt was just killing me. And I looked at my dad and I'm like, are you uncomfortable? And he was like, no, I'm good. And then it hit me. I was still running the prototype vest that had the cushion on it. That was the wrong cushion that, you know, I don't even sell anymore. I never sold it, but we, you know, in prototyping, it's like, hey, this is not good enough. But when I pre-sold everything last year, I sold out. And so I was like, well, I'm, you know, I'm going to sell this stuff. I can utilize something different, you know, even if it's an old prototype, it's cool. And that's what I ended up doing. And then I'm still utilizing it this year. And I'm like, all right, I got to switch this. I got to get it. So when I got back to town, that was the first thing I did. I grabbed one of them new seat cushions. And I'm like, man, this is a game changer right here. So mouth call pocket and the cushion. Those are my two favorite features on it.
You got to love it when the owner himself sells himself again afterwards on his product, man. I think I about hyperextended my knee last year because I was sitting on a roosted turkey in a swamp bottom that took forever to come down. And when he finally came down, he literally flew through the swamp like a fighter jet and landed to my side, and I shot him and he was flopping. And so I went to jump up and I got this on camera. It's embarrassing as can be. I sound like a 60-year-old man that got punched in the gut. I jump up in my right leg because I wasn't on the cushion. I was afraid to move. It was dead. I'm talking just dead. And I went to stand on that thing and I just go, oh, and I in front of the camera, I about fall over before I get over to the bird, man. But that's what I'm excited about. I'm really excited about getting that ability to sit there for a little bit longer, because I'm an anxious person as it is. But if I could be comfortable, I think maybe I could eke out another 5-10 minutes and maybe kill a bird.
Yeah, you know, being comfortable is huge. Because if you're not, you know, and you move just, I mean, y'all know, y'all turkey hunt, like, yep. Y'all understand how good these animals can see. Man, if you're not comfortable, that can be a Debbie Downer real quick. Like, I mean, it can ruin a hunt, man, so fast. And you're just like, oh, I got all this time in it. And you know what I mean? Now I blew it. Like, so yeah, got to be comfortable. Got to be.
All right, Chase, what's your thought?
Is there going to be a generation two?
There will be a generation two. So, you know, one of the things about my company versus competitors' companies, I want to be very open and be very transparent. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you everything that I'm going to come out with, right? Because obviously there's a strategy behind it and everything. There will be a version two out next year. So the buckles on the straps, I've had some issues not holding. And it seems to be what I have found dictated or stem from people that carry a whole lot of stuff with them. Okay. So they got a lot of weight in the front two pockets or just on the front of the vest. And over time, as you're walking, those buckles tend to slip out. And so we're going to change the buckles on the front. There will still be buckles there to unclip from. But we will change those. I'm going to change them on the game bag because the same thing can happen on the game bag. Especially if you're putting stuff back there a lot. Like I carry extra jackets or, you know what I mean? Every now and then, if I'm going to a spot where I'm going to be sitting a long time, I'll put a chair back there. So those buckles tend to slip and all that extra webbing tends to loosen up over time. And then it's just a pain. You just got to tighten it back up. It's not hard. But yeah, there will be a generation two out next year.
Gotcha. I'm glad you asked that. That was one of my closers, Chase. That was a good one, man. I was going to say, tell us about it, but you just asked the question. He's the kind of guy, he's just going to tell you about it. So that's awesome, man. What's the future look like for like additional vests for you? Like, are you going to be the guy that has like a vest with no box call pocket, a vest with nothing but box call pockets? Is that the goal? Or are you going to be really systematic about what you kind of roll out and perfect what you have over a series of years before you branch out?
Yeah. So to me, I'm going to come out with more vests. It will be, you know, kind of systematic like you were talking about, right? So again, going into this, I had no experience in manufacturing and any of this stuff, right? So you encounter a problem and then you got to learn to overcome the problem and figure out ways to solve the problem. You know, with this vest, the issue of the buckles, you know, was a big one. So it's like, okay, one of the things I learned is like, okay, I'm going to learn at least for one more year. Now I'm working on other projects, right now, not necessarily a vest. But there will be other vests to come eventually. Now it may take me 3 or 4 years before I get there, but I still feel like I have at least one more year of learning before, I start to develop another vest or something like that. But eventually through the years, Lord willing, there will be more vests out, not just this one.
I like that, man. That's exciting. If you carry the passion that you have for this with everything else, it's obviously going to be a winner. So here's my closer for you, my good man. I want you to share with everyone your most embarrassing turkey hunt.
Most embarrassing turkey hunt?
The one that just at the end of the day, you're laying in bed and you can't sleep and it's living rent-free in the back of your head.
Oh, gosh, man. I mean, there's so many. There's literally – so, like, people ask me all the time, like, have you ever missed a turkey? I'm like, oh, absolutely I've missed a turkey. Like, you know, there's no telling how many turkeys I've missed. Like, an unbelievable amount, unfortunately. And I wish that was not the case. But probably one that was just like, are you serious? Just like, I was probably 12 years old, and my dad used to take me turkey hunting before school. And, you know, we might not get very long, you know, to hunt, but we'd at least go. And we're sitting there on this bench up in the mountain, and turkeys have been gobbling. Really, there was one turkey gobbling way off to our right, so we really, you know, didn't feel like we were in the game. And all of a sudden, I kind of looked to the left, and here comes two longbeards, you know, coming right down. I mean, right in our lap. I mean, they go behind this big rock, tell my dad, get our guns up. They walk right out, both broadside. Okay? We shoot. Both of us whiff. Both of us. Boom, boom, we whiff. And, you know, we're just like, what just happened, right? Turkeys pitched off the mountain and fly down. Kind of river makes a big bend, makes a big horseshoe. And we had kind of suspected that in the back of that bend, there's a field. And it was that direction that the turkey went. So we were like, well, let's go down there. We've still got some time. And so we go down there. And I'm like 99% sure it was the same two turkeys. We end up striking them again. They come up there. And dadgum, if I didn't miss again. Like, now I could be wrong. They could have been two different turkeys, but just where they were and knowing the farm and the lay of the land, you know, I just really suspected that they were the same two. I was the only one that got a shot that time. My dad didn't even get a shot. So, you know, I had to eat that one. But that's probably one of my most embarrassing. I mean, I'm sure there's something else that might be better than that. But I can't come up with it right off the cuff.
We'll chew on it. We'll have you on for a part two at some point in time. We'll swap embarrassing turkey stories.
Sounds good. Okay, well, what's yours?
I'm a turkey hunter. That's the embarrassing part. The fact that I kill turkeys is an embarrassment. No,
that's the joke.
Yeah, that's the joke. Walter's a turkey hunter. What's my most embarrassing turkey? I don't know that I've been around long enough to have a most embarrassing. I feel like after only three seasons, like I'm the butt of every joke until moving forward. Cause I don't know that I've made enough good mistakes yet, man. I don't know if I've got one.
Well, Bo, what about you? Cause I know you're a turkey hunter.
Oof. There's a couple that come to mind. You said something earlier that I can relate to. I hunt with my father a lot. He retired a couple years ago. So if I can make it over to the lease, I'll hunt with him almost every time. He picks all the time. It's like playing golf with your dad. You know, he just the whole time he compliments you on how good you do stuff. And so when I'm hunting with him, I feel just like I'm 10 foot tall. I caught a bird in. It was actually 2 or 3 years ago. I caught a bird in and he missed. The bird, it came in and hung up. He kind of rushed his shot a little bit, but there was a second bird and the bird split completely. And he said that bird over there is not to the left, not scared of us. He said, I don't think I really scared him. We ought to go over there. So we walk a little bit. He said, we should sit down right here. I look at him, I said, there's no way we're going to sit here. That bird's going to come in here. There's no big deal. And I cut just one time. Didn't even get the second one out. And he gobbled three pine rows over. And there was just a wall there. And he looks at me, my dad, and goes, I told you. And the bird steps out and gobbles again before taking flight and flying.
Oh, man.
So I had a nice 200-yard walk back to the truck without receiving how good of a turkey hunter I was from my father's birthday. So, that one there hurt, and that one does live rent free in the back of my mind.
I bet it does too.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, Chase, it's your turn.
Oh man, most embarrassing. I'd probably say it was probably the first bird that I ever shot at, and I was new to turkey hunting. My father-in-law actually got me into turkey hunting. And like I said, the only thing I had was that box call that I mentioned earlier. I only had a box call, and he gave me some decoys because it was this little piece that I was going to be hunting, and he had this huge area that he was going to go hunt. He's like, yeah, you can kind of come set up over here. He's like, there's a, and he, I mean, I didn't do nothing about turkey hunting really. He's like, there's a tree stand right over there. He's like, go get up in that tree. He's wanting me to hunt from a tree stand basically with the shotgun. So he's like, go put your decoy out. So it's in the dark. I've never even been in this spot. So I put the decoy out, go climb up in this like 20 foot tree stand, get in it. I'm sitting there, it's dark, bird fires off. I mean, I couldn't be probably 30 or 40 yards from this bird. He's hammering. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't even know what to do. I just kind of just hit the box call. I knew nothing about anything. Just hit the box call a little bit, make a little bit of noise. He hammers to it. And he flies down like right on top of my decoy. And I was using my father-in-law's shotgun, which was, it was like a 3.5 inch shotgun. And I'd actually never shot it before. So bird's right there on the decoy. I fire at it. And I guess I didn't have it butted up against my shoulder very well, because it kicked up and hit me like dead in the face, And I'm like, who the heck just punched me in the face? And I look down, the bird's still standing there. Like he's just kind of like still right at the decoys. So I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to give him another one. Shoot again. Bam. Hits me in the face again. And the bird at that point finally just runs off. And I'm like, how the heck did I miss this bird? I'm shooting like this 3.5 inch turkey rounds, whatever. Well, I didn't realize I had put that decoy out there like probably 70 yards from where the tree stand actually, or from the tree stand actually was. And I was 20 feet up in a tree or whatever. So I just chalked that up to inexperience more than probably embarrassing, but that's probably my most embarrassing turkey hunt right there. Getting punched in the face. Like literally I thought Mike Tyson had punched me in the face twice.
That's hilarious.
With that gun.
I've never heard that story, man.
It was like an old Mossberg, like pump shotgun. And I mean, like I said, I was definitely not ready for it whenever I pulled that trigger.
Shoot, dude. Well, dude, man, listen, here's the deal. I would love to have you back on at some point. I think we could just talk turkey. I think we could talk turkey tactics. I want to do that again.
Yeah.
My goal is to get to Alabama in the very near future. Probably not this year, but definitely next year. I want to get my 49x49 is kind of my goal. So I'm going to start hitting the states that are nearby. So maybe I can combine a long trip up to Alabama, you know, because y'all's hunting ends at 2, right?
One.
So it's liable to be one of those situations where I'm gonna be bored in the afternoons, and so
yeah, man.
Maybe we can get up and you can teach me how to run a turkey call.
Let's do it. I'd love to.
All right, before we leave, tell everybody where they can find your two brands so that now that they're hyped up, they can go spend hundreds of dollars with you.
That's right. Yeah, thousands, I mean, preferably, but never. So if you're interested in the vest, I'll have gloves and base mask out soon. That's kind of it hasn't been a secret. I released those, I guess, at the NWCF convention in Nashville. Groundedbrand.com. You can check those out there if you're interested in any calls. We offer pretty much everything turkey call. Footonthehead.com.
DA
for Drew Abel. That's how that came about.
Dadgummit, that's clever. I should have seen that coming too, man. I walked right into that. That's cool.
Go to turkey, you put your foot on the head.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Okay, guys, if you enjoyed this episode, do me a favor. Go follow him on social media at the bare minimum. But if you want some good stuff and to support a good guy, clearly who's got a passion for bringing us the best stuff that he can possibly put together, go patronize his store, spend some money with him. Until next time, no matter what you do, do me one solid. Get outside and enjoy the great outdoors.
Hey, everyone. Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone.
Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
You'd think, with four of us spread out on a tiny island, that the task of tagging a whitetail would not be a big thing. But, as I've learned, no matter where I've been, whitetails can be damn tricky.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.